This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, everybody. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes. It's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
Fo-fo bulldog, my motherfucking pet. I pointed at you and tell that motherfucker fetch. I'm fucking the girl, she got her legs on my neck.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTBN studios. And joining me, as always, the man who started a creepy trend because Big Show just showed up on Raw clean-shaven and looks weird, just like this guy did a couple weeks ago, and that's Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 461 of the longest-running episodic Gold Dender. Well, today, it's obviously much fuller now, so not Enzo full, but it's much fuller now, and you'll be much more at ease. But, JR, always good to talk to you, sir, and saw me on film last weekend in your favorite borough, in your favorite arena, with your favorite group of fans. Back-to-back night, I was at SummerSlam myself, the driver of the limo, Mr. Armento, the doctor, and D'Amato, Greeny. And it was a good, fun show, good crowd.
We talked to all of us last week, didn't we?
Were we on? Oh, yeah, we were on Tuesday. Weird, I totally forgot it was Tuesday. That's right,
go.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
So there we go, never mind.
I don't need to hear anything else more about Armento than I ever already heard.
No, he gets enough plug in other ways. Yeah. Although he needs plugs. Last weekend of summer is upon us. A lot of people technically think this weekend is the last weekend of summer that came by, and Labor Day weekend's like the epilogue before.
Whatever. Stuff kicks in, stupid. You know? Next week will be our final Yacht Rock summer weekend. So
yes,
well, a couple more songs left here before we go into send the ship out to sail. Of course, we here listen to it year round on the SiriusXM app.
We absolutely do. And the best part is, you know, I had an older car before I got my new one, not as old as fucking McGinn, but you know, I had a regular radio, and it was kind of neat. In my new car, I have Sirius, and I have all the stations, you know, all my presets, and one of them was 17, which was Yacht Rock. And then, of course, what was it last Wednesday, last Thursday?
No, it was a couple weeks ago now.
Yeah, it switched from 17 to 70, and I'm thinking, oh, and I gotta go look for it, redo it, and everything. No, they, the presets, I don't know if this works, if this happens on yours, JR, because I know you have it saved.
It automatically switches.
Yeah, it just so now it's channel 70, but it's still my preset that I have there, which is actually pretty awesome. So
they know what a lazy jamoke you are, so it was all set.
Well, yeah, and how technologically inept I am with cars, since I had the same car for so long. Not as long as McGinn, who, you know, doesn't needs tape and screws for his bumper, but.
All right. Why don't we? We're making
our
third man way too long here tonight, and of course that is the Bam Bam Gordy to the rest of the group here. Kelly Nelson, how are you, sir?
I'm great. I'm Bam Bam. I'm Gordy now. I'm moving up in the ranks.
No, you'll always be Buddy Jack because I think you look good with the Freebird hair cream or whatever.
Yeah, and Buddy Jack was Canadian too, so it makes sense.
All right, yeah, that's right, Buddy Jack.
He's about as Georgia as we are.
I have to write it on my hand in marker or something, so I remember every week which one it is.
As long as none of us are Iceman King Parsons. He was only a Freebird for like a day.
I'm just going to get a tattoo on my forearm that says Kelly equals Buddy Jack, and no one will ever know what it means.
All right, gentlemen, why don't we hop in? Because we have one of our more unique shows that we'll ever do. We are back in our office after being, where the heck were we? We were in Richfield, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Richfield, Ohio last week, JR. This week, with obviously with Mr. Nelson back, we're back up in our cushy Manhattan suite, otherwise known as the big building on 33rd Street. So let's dive in. For tonight, it is October 20th, 1986, from venerable Madison Square Garden on 33rd Street. And a little WWF live event action. Oh, yeah. And the other half of the roster tonight was in Nashville at the Auditorium, which is probably not even open anymore. I'll have to ask Pete that. It's probably some. It's probably a parking lot or storage facility or Chick-fil-A. Graham Coughlin has on the history of WWE.com is included WWF Intercontinental Champion Randy Savage. So the Macho Man not with us tonight. As a matter of fact, guys, not a lot of singles wrestlers on the card this evening. There's a definite theme in the world's most famous arena tonight. And it's actually a pretty cool one. So, JR, why don't we hop in?
Let's do it. It's October in New York, so everyone's getting ready to go trick-or-treating, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have some notes here from Mr. Jarvis. Just a few things that have happened since Saturday's main event that we talked about last Tuesday. After weeks of hype on the 10-4 episode of Superstars, we get the debut of the Honky Tonk Man, who debuted as Babyface. We'll be talking about him as we move forward. On the same episode, after being beat up in a 3-on-1 attack during Piper's Pit versus the Flower Shop Debate, Piper comes out to the Flower Shop to set on a crutch, pulls out a baseball bat, and yells, "Goodbye, Flower Shop," and destroys the set. On 10-11, the British Bulldogs debut their new mascot, Matilda. We'll talk about her tonight. And on 10-18, Dino Bravo returned to the WWF as a heel with bleach blonde hair. So a few guys we'll be talking about, I'm sure, in the weeks to come. Back inside the Garden, Gorilla, Lord Al, and Mean Gene have the call this month. Gene's first appearance since, what, War to Settle the Score? Is that the last time we heard him? Or was he into the spring after one? I forget. Maybe a couple into the spring.
He might have been into the spring after one, but not. It wasn't much.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's been so much better without him, and now here he is. Here we go. Our opener on this night of tag team singles action, as you'll see the theme as we move through this. B. Brian Blair battles Brutus Beefcake, so a member of the Dream Team, against the Killer Bees. An interesting opener. We get a rare look at Beefer as a solo guy. Good barometer here against Blair to measure his improvement. I thought Blair's a good challenger for him. A rock solid pro. A nice opener on paper. Gorilla says Beefcake has slimmed down. Looks like a racehorse. As Al says Blair has bulked up. Gene says Beefer hasn't been the same since that WrestleMania 2 loss. Gorilla really thinks the Dream Team have like these fragile psyches. Like, he always comments on every one of these matches how they're still like hung over from that WrestleMania 2 loss, which is now like 7 months ago. We get some talk during the lockup about the Bulldogs training regiment as Al says Brutus is over that loss, Gorilla. Blair gets a headlock as Gorilla wonders where Johnny V is tonight. The two trade some early offense as Gorilla says that despite the weight loss, Beefer looks lethargic here. Blair controls her a bit, working away at the arm and nabbing some near falls as Brutus tries to work his way out. Beefer finally slips free and chills on the floor as Gene talks about his son missing a year on the ice now due to a knee injury. And that's Gene's son, not Beefcake's. Beefcake comes back in, but Blair maintains control, getting a nice back suplex for two. Beefcake bails again and slides back in on a lockup. Beefcake lands a sharp elbow to take control and goes to work with hard strikes and then goes to the eyes when Blair tries for a comeback. Beefcake chokes and punches away, grabbing a near fall and then hooking in a modified camel clutch. Blair battles out. We get a big slugfest as the crowd is fired up. Blair gets an atomic drop and then levels Beefcake with a hard clothesline and follows with elbow drops for two. Blair gets a cross body block, but Beefer rolls through, hooking the tights and snagging the win, and the crowd was not happy with that at all. Nifty little match. It was well-structured, cut a solid pace, didn't overstay its welcome. I thought both guys looked solid. It really came down to a toss-up with some nice heel cheating, and I thought it was a good win for Beefcake, and Blair doesn't really get hurt by stuff like this, so I thought it was a shrewd way to get Beefcake a win, and I went with 2 stars in this, Scott.
Yes, JR, I did 2 stars as well. Your official runtime, 9:24. Very balanced show tonight in terms of match times. I wonder why they need a Mean Gene in the booth. I mean, Gorilla and Alpha have been pretty solid. We might as well just let the cat out of the bag now. There really isn't much in the way of backstage anything tonight, so it's not like he was needed for any interviews. So, and he was there, so they're probably thinking, Vince is like, look, you little shit, you're not working for nothing, so you're not getting paid for nothing, so go over and sit next to them. That's probably what that was. The referee looked a lot like Mario Mancini. I don't know if I've ever seen him before, but he was very very Ultra Guido-ish tonight. Very Mancini-ish. Speaking of referees, they do mention, obviously, the jabbing of Danny Davis. So, obviously, that started. And his, suspect refereeing skills, which we'll obviously delve into more as the rest of the year progresses and into 1987. I like how Gorilla goes, you know, Gene, you've been missed. You know, the fans are asking where you were. No, they weren't.
Definitely not.
Shut up, Gorilla. It was a good, but to the match itself, really good. And, you know, we've talked often, guys, about Beefcake and his, you know, evolution and his progression. And this match, I mean, let's go back to the last really high-profile singles match, which was WrestleMania 1, and you're talking about two completely different matches. Now, he was working with B. Brian Blair, not that big fucking ham hock David Sammartino, so obviously he was working with an upgrade. But still, exceptional back and forth. And I think Beefers, I think some of Beefers kind of ready for the big time. They're pretty much ready to maybe strike out on his own. I don't know if that's obviously it's not official, but if it was coming to that at some point, right. I think he's definitely ready for it now.
Yeah. I mean, it felt like maybe this could have been a test, but then when you look at the rest of the card, you realize what they were doing. So I don't know how much of a real test run it was. I mean, at first you're kind of thinking maybe it will be, but looking at the card, it's obviously just part of the theme.
Yeah, exactly. But he still looked good. Definitely better than he was in some of the previous singles matches he's had. So having a tutor like the Hammer, who we'll see later on, is obviously awesome as always, has definitely helped. So I like the match. 2 stars, grading it a little higher for me for a beefcake match, but he definitely earned it, Kel.
Yeah, well, we're in complete agreement. I went 2 stars. Also, yeah, I agree. Beefcake's, he's definitely improved. But, I mean, you know, being in the ring with Valentine night after night and with some other good talent, you know, you have to improve. And, yeah, I think, yeah, we definitely were past the worst of Beefcake. I mean, well, no, maybe not. until the mid-90s, anyways, or whenever, early 90s. But I really like Blair. I defended him on Tag Teams Back Again with Marty Sleaze every chance I could get. So I think he's a really good worker. So that also helped improve the quality of this match. I made the same note about Gorilla bringing up Gene's son having a knee injury playing hockey in Minnesota. That was an interesting little, you know, peek behind the scenes that you usually don't get. I had no, you know, I don't know much about Gene's, you know, life beyond wrestling.
He was in the Olympics, right? He was an Olympic hockey player.
Oh, really? Wow.
I thought so. You know that, Scott, if that's true?
If what? I'm sorry?
Wasn't Gene's son an Olympic hockey player?
I think so. I'll double check.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, coming from Minnesota, that's where a lot of the top talent in the States for hockey comes from. So yeah, that would make sense. And yeah, I like Blair's fired up comeback at the end. The crowd was totally behind them. They were totally into this match by the end, but we have the first of what would be a trend tonight with kind of suspect finishes with Beefcake here using the tights for the pin. And yes, that won't be the last time we see kind of a screwy finish tonight.
And I didn't mind it here per se. Though, because I thought Beefcake, it helped him, you know what I mean? But, yeah, the finishes are still a mess as we move through this. Gene's son, Todd, you got it? He was on the University of Minnesota hockey team and then played for the 88 Olympics team in Calgary.
In Calgary. Oh, cool. And then Kelly Nelson ran on the ice like a lunatic and pulled a Tanya Harding on his knee.
I did go to a game during that Olympics. It was Canada versus the Soviet Union, though, at a time when... of course, there was no pros involved, and the Soviet Union had guys that would have been pros.
There's no doubt.
Canada was destroyed. I think it was something like 5-0, 6-0. And I just remember there was a huge bench-clearing brawl near the end of the game with blood on the ice, like a real serious fight, because that was how Canada was trying to...
Ruskies.
Yeah, Canada was trying to save face, basically, before their home crowd. But, yeah, that's interesting.
It looks like he played 4 games for the Islanders, too, and then a knee injury pushed him into retirement.
Yep. Huh.
Todd Okerlund.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on that match, Kelly?
No. You're right. The finishes, it's more the execution of the finishes going forward than the actual, like, cheating behind the finishes.
Yes, right. And that's always the theme on the fucking shows.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the ring for our next match, and it's another split of tag teams here as the Moondog Rex takes on Tama from the Islanders. Rex going solo, taking on the recently returned Red Hot Tama, gets a nice reaction for his entrance. Get a bunch of stalling as Al talks about Tama's maturity since his original debut. Gorilla notes Tama's springs in his legs, and Gene says he's in perpetual motion. Rex works an early headlock, but Tama breaks free and gets a double leapfrog before jamming a punch to the gut. Rex tries to run Tama to the buckle, but that doesn't go well, and Tama buries him with a headbutt and punches away before flipping Rex into a chinlock. Tama nearly gets a three count on a crossbody and then goes back to a chinlock. Rex lands a knee, but the comeback is cut short as Tama chops away. Rex gets tied up in the ropes, dodges a wild Tama charge, and the Islander goes crashing to the floor. Rex suplexes Tama back in for two and then goes to work on the back while also choking away. Rex grabs a bear hug and squeezes, but Tama claps the ears to bust free and punches. The two trade heavy blows until Tama lights him up with chops and a backdrop. Tama chops Rex down, heads up, and hits a high cross body for the win. Another perfectly fine match. I thought both guys looked pretty good. Tom is so talented. Just oozes out of him. Just so smooth in the ring. A great connection with the fans. I just picture everyone backstage like, oh, this is what we wanted. You know, from Stevie Hoffman. It's like this is what we're looking for. Rex is fine, too. The end was a bit out of nowhere, but I thought a better build late could have bumped this up a little bit. But still pretty fun. I went star and a half on this one. What do you think about Kelly?
Yeah, that's what I went with, too. The middle part with the bear hugs was what knocked it down from the rating for the first match. Just it slowed things down quite a bit. But, yeah, good work by both guys. Tama's shine at the start was really good. I loved the bump he took to the outside that sent Rex on the offense. And, not too much else to say. I love Tama. Totally an underrated worker, a great babyface, and will be a great heel. And we got a lot of good Tama to come at MSG coming up. So, yeah, 1.5 stars.
I give it 1.5 stars also. Your official time, 8:18. Alfred's word of the day, since Lanny Poffel's not here, we don't get supple. Alfred's word of the day is ponderous.
Yes.
I think he said ponderous like 4 times during this match. Pretty basic match, power versus speed. Good to see Sexy Rexy back, because we were saying that he was gone forever, and now he's kind of working his butt off again. So good to see Rex back. Not much more to say. Good match. And definitely what we see in Tama is what they wanted out of Siviafi, and Siviafi was just a drone. So, it was very well done. And again, like Spotty, Rex, serviceable singles guy who can give you a decent 8-minute thing without anything being too offensive, depending on the opponent. So, not much more to say. Star and a half, solid match. Tama looks good, gets the win.
All right.
Next up.
Very good, very good. We're going to get a lot of that quick express line tonight, I think.
Yes.
Not much in the way of feuds on this show. This one, though, is one of the few. Next up, we have the continuation of the Machines versus Heenan Family feud as King Kong Bundy battles the Super Machine, of course, Bill Eady. The war between the Machines and Heenan Family continues on. Bundy's out solo this month as a Super Machine, but still has his funky music. Gene calls Super a great technician and says he saw him wrestle in Japan. Super dodges a Bundy charge and dodges an avalanche and gets a crossbody for a big pop in two. Bundy takes control of the stiff backbreaker and pounds away at the back. Super lands a few shots, but Bundy catches him with the avalanche for the win. Really sad. Just right when I was getting into it, too, a little bit, it just ended. And Super was treated like a star, like coming out, and then like 10 seconds go by and he's a fucking jobber. It was like the weirdest dichotomy ever. You know, he comes out, he's hot, the crowd's into him, he gets a few big moves, and then boom, he just gets squashed. Just an odd match. It does remind us from a kayfabe stance that Bundy can just end things in a blink with his avalanche. But very disappointing. I was kind of hoping for more out of this one, especially the Super Machine looked great when he came out and was all fired up, and then just blah. So I went dud with this. I was not a fan at all, Scott.
Yeah, I gave it a dud, but not really because the match was bad, but I mean, only 3 minutes, couple moves, nothing great. What's funny is I was going to say, when I first started watching the match today, I wrote one of my comments, Bundy sliding slowly down the ladder, and then he actually wins this match. So
right. By squash. So I mean, it's a squash, basically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they get that one, you know, he does the one, eats that one, like, high cross body, and that was pretty much it. So that was kind of perplexing. And 3 minutes is perfectly fine. Nothing offensive there. And I think him winning this match more led to what was going on in the main event later this evening from a kind of a psychological viewpoint in terms of booking. But again, really not much to say. I mean, it was a 3-minute power match. Nothing great. Deserves to be a dud. But not because it was bad. It's just really nothing to grade on. If, you know, this is one of those cases where we usually do like non-applicable, but no, you got to grade it. It's a singles match, and it wasn't a great 3 minutes, so it's a dud, Kel.
Yeah, this one hurt me a little because on paper, I thought this was going to be one of the more interesting matches. I'm a big Bill Eadie fan. I've come to really appreciate Bundy in the last few months. So this one had potential. I went half a star because it started off pretty good. I liked the near fall that Super Machine had on Bundy. That was really cool right at the beginning. But then it was a squash. I'm thinking this was, the machines were pretty much done. So they were pretty much just using them to put over guys.
Right.
Big, right? I mean, because otherwise, prior to this, they were pushed pretty heavy. They were super over. They got, of all the performers on the card tonight, they got as big a pop as anybody. Super Machine here and then later in the Battle Royal. So they were definitely over. But it was clearly, as a pushed act, they were done. That had been decided. I think Andre was, they may have even had started planning towards WrestleMania 3 at this point, whatever. But it was obvious that the Machine's angle was over. So, yeah, you get a total squash, which sucks. This could have been a really good match if given proper time and if they'd allowed Super Machine to actually be competitive in a match. So, but yeah, I went half a star, kind of a pity half star. I couldn't go dud because I actually enjoyed, what I watched, but yeah, it was a squash.
Yeah. I mean, it was enjoyable, but it was so disappointing to me that equaled it out, to cancel it out because I was getting into it. I felt really pissed when it ended. You know what I mean? Like it was just getting kind of hot.
I know.
Yeah. I agree with that. Yep. Yeah. I thought so too.
All right. Next up, we have another continuation, kind of a feud and a reheating of a feud, as one half of our World Tag Team Champions, Dynamite Kid, takes on Jim the Anvil Neidhart. And it looks like maybe the Hearts are finally getting elevated up into a program with the champs after we just talked about how they've kind of been floundering a bit and doing not much at all over the last year. And it looks like now maybe they're being positioned as foils for the Bulldogs. Dynamite's out alone with Rule Britannia playing, but he is accompanied by Matilda for the first time here in MSG. We open up with a lockup and some feeling out as Anvil dodges across body and rolls outside to regroup. Anvil comes back in, but Dynamite takes him right down and goes to work on the arm. Anvil breaks the hold by hoisting Dynamite up and then follows him out and slams him hard to the floor. Back inside, Anvil works over the back but comes up empty on a splash off the middle rope. Dynamite quickly scales the top and hits a missile dropkick that leads to a weird Anvil bump. Dynamite follows with a clothesline but whiffs on a dive into the ropes. Anvil celebrates, but Dynamite's able to gather his bearings, slip to his feet, and roll Anvil up for the win. Again, this was fine, but never really got going and was kind of short overall. The finish was cool, but really not much else to see here. I went a star kill.
Yeah, I like this more than you. I went 2 stars.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't a mind-blowing match or anything, but it was wrestled at a pretty good pace. Good back and forth action. I mean, these guys had wrestled each other tons of times prior to this, so they knew each other in the ring really well. And Dynamite, I love seeing him before the back injury happens because he was still really good, really fast. And I the finish was an interesting little clever spot where he rebounded from the ropes and Anvil wasn't aware that he had, and he rolled him up. So that was kind of neat, but yeah, nothing great. But on this card, I mean, we have all these random tag singles matches with no real feuds, no angles behind them. So it's almost like a battle bowl or some sort of weird thing, gimmick thing with random matches, right? Where you usually don't get anything too exciting out of it.
Heat or intrigue. It's just
there's just no heat, exactly. Yeah. So, but these two guys, like I said, wrestled each other so many times over the years, so they were able to put out, a short little exciting match just, out of nowhere if they had to. But, yeah, 2 stars.
Yeah, I gave it a star, JR, just like you did. And I kind of like the whole Battle Bowl theory there, Kel. I think it's true. I mean, and I think that's why the crowd is mildly subdued. And Gorilla doesn't mention it here. He mentions it in our next, in a couple matches from now, that the crowd seems kind of flat. They don't say flat, but I mean, I'm saying flat, but he alludes to the fact they're not. And I think that's why, like, random match. I mean, it's one thing to have random matches, but obviously when you go to a house show, you expect, you know, something for your buck in terms of, you know, entertainment, intrigue. And tonight, it's almost like strict work rate, strict in-ring action to lead to the main event later, which involves almost all these guys anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of got to, you do kind of have to go into this show with a different frame of mind than you would your average, you know, your normal house show at the Garden. And it is funny that the one match that had some kind of history in it thus far was the shortest and the least entertaining, you know. But this was fun. Your official match time, 5:49, so a perfect length to have anything with the anvil in it by himself. And the first thing I typed, JR, in my comments was exactly what you said. We've been talking about the Hart Foundation kind of floating aimlessly, but this kind of begins their rocket push now as Anvil takes on, except his opponent or his partner doesn't take on the other guy's partner, which I thought was kind of odd. But we'll get
well,
to that.
Well, I thought that might come too, but I kind of, I mean, their whole gimmick is that they're just mixing up and like randomizing these matches, right? So I think every team was pretty much against different guys. I don't think there's any where each partner fights the other partners, right?
Yeah. It seemed like you would think that they would have done that anyway, just for, you know, the shits of it, but I mean, it doesn't affect anything. I mean, the show, we'll get into the overall thing later, but I like Dynamite with Anvil. If you're going to pair them off, I think Davey Boy Anvil would have been pretty ugly, to be honest with you. I think Dynamite and Anvil actually was a pretty good 5:49. It wasn't anything earth-shattering, but I will say that Anvil definitely is a little bit better than he was, you know, in that 85 when he was still singles, or even 80. If you watch any stuff from 84 when he was here, that stuff's just dreck. That's totally unwatchable. But being with Brett and kind of being in this tag team mode, he seems to be able to carry himself better as a singles guy than he did like a year and a half ago.
Right.
But again, it's nothing crazy. You know, decent little battle between small guy, big guy, but definitely a harbinger of things to come between their prospective teams as we continue on through the tail end of this year. So, 1 star, nothing offensive.
What'd you guys think of Matilda?
I wonder if the gimmick of just being British and the tag team champions was waning and they needed to have an animal with them to...
No, they're the greatest gymnastic team in wrestling today.
That's right.
I've been told. That's the kind of their hook, right? I mean, is it...
Exactly.
Do you think they... I mean, do you think it's because they don't have Albano anymore that they felt like they needed some kind of... Like, I don't know. Or is it just that they're entering this really kid-friendly era and the British Bulldogs and they have the Bulldog and like, I don't know. I don't... That's going to be it, right?
Vince was on an animal kick big time in 86. I mean, he had Jake with the snake. Coco Beware would have a parrot. Even Ricky Steamboat had the dragon.
Yeah, so I guess that's probably what it was. Just...
It was for whatever reason, maybe some market research told them that, oh, you need more animals.
Animals are hot right now. Was that, what's his name? Was the zoo guy, like big time in 86? I don't know. What the hell's that guy's name?
He'd been big since the 70s, I think. The guy that was on the Carson show all the time.
Yeah. Oh, Jack Fowler. Jack Fowler.
No, it was Fowler. Wasn't it Jim Fowler?
No,
was that his
it was
name?
Jack. Oh, shit. Look that up.
There was definitely one named Fowler, wasn't there?
No, you're thinking of your announcer friend from WrestleMania.
not Joe. He was at WrestleMania 8. Joe Fowler? SummerSlam 83.
Whatever. Same thing. Jack. Well, it was Joan Emery. She was the female.
Right. Jim Fowler. Yeah. Jim Fowler, right here. American professional zoologist and host of the Emmy Award-winning TV show Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom.
Yes.
Is that who you were thinking of, Kelly?
Yes. Yeah,
the official Mutual wildlife correspondent for The Today Show, regularly seen on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, making 40 appearances in total.
Yeah.
There was another guy, though.
Mm.
There was another guy.
Accept apologies anytime.
No, I'm not giving you shit. Because there's another guy named Jack.
Yeah.
Another guy. We'll get to the next match and then we'll talk about it.
Gladly.
Keep talking about
Matilda. I think we're good with Matilda. We'll see her again in a bit. All right, head back to the ring. And more tag team solo action as Jacques Rougeau battles the Iron Sheik. This is a nice match on paper here, looking like it could be a good one. Sheik has Nikolai with him and spouts off on the mic before attacking Rougeau as he gets in the ring. Sheik is all over Rougeau, kicking away and choking him with his headgear. Rougeau comes back with a crossbody off the middle rope for two and then kicks and punches away. Sheik bails outside to gather himself as Gorilla puts over the Rougeaus in Montreal. Jacques maintains control with a flurry of offense into a headlock and lands some stiff knees, but Sheik's able to leverage him to the floor. Jacques crawls back in, but Sheik clubs away and grabs an abdominal stretch, which Gorilla says isn't applied properly. We'll never beat Rougeau with that hold. Jacques breaks out, and Sheik slugs him down for two. Sheik gets a gut-wrench suplex for two, and Gorilla rips his lazy pin cover. Jacques blocks a suplex and gets one of his own, but Sheik is up first and just throws Jacques to the floor and spits on him from the middle rope, which is pretty funny. Gorilla and Gene think the spitting should be an automatic DQ, but Al quotes the rule book to debate that statement, saying, no, it's not true. Jacques comes back to the ring with a sunset flip and steals the win. Another match that feels like it ended yet again right before it got into gear. This was good in spots thanks to Sheik's offense and Jacques selling, but it was really missing that kick to the next level. Fun enough. The Rougeaus continued to be hot. I went 2 stars on this one, but I feel like it maybe, again, could have been a little bit more, which is weird because the way they've shoehorned this card together, you think some of these matches could have got a little bit more time, but they all feel a bit express lane tonight. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I gave this a... it was on my other page. I gave this 2 stars.
Yep.
Two good workers. I'm questioning about Sheik. Do we think Sheik is kind of finally checked out to a certain extent? Your official match time 7:29. Sheik definitely felt more active, though. I don't know, it's hard to say because Sheik definitely seemed like he was going through the motions. Obviously, you know, him and Nikolai are still tag teaming, but there's like a myriad of tag teams now that have passed them. And that's why I feel like this match was not as good as it could have been.
I mean, two really good. I thought Sheik was fine. I didn't think it was him. I just think they didn't get a lot of time to tell the story. Like, it was just getting going. Again, just another match. I feel like all the matches tonight, really, were just, except for the opener, just as they were kind of getting going, we hit the finish. I thought Sheik looked fine. I thought he looked engaged and into the match. He didn't seem to be going through the motions or anything.
Mm. And Jacques is, I mean, obviously, when we see the Rougeaus together, they're an exceptional team. So it was a good mix here. And but again, we're talking about filling a show of tag team singles guys. And in this instance, you had a guy that works well as a tag team and a singles guy against pretty much a strict tag guy. Sheik did a lot of spitting. And yeah, that's pretty much it. It was this match, sort of, but mostly our next match after our segment where... the announcers were Gorilla and Alfred and Gene really start laying out the crowd for not being as engaged as they should be. And they lay into them for the next couple, although the next segment they go crazy, but we'll get to that in a second. Yeah, otherwise not too bad. But I'm wondering if Sheik mentally is getting to the end of his rope, but we'll see, Cal.
Yeah. Well, this is an interesting crowd tonight because the attendance I think was maybe the lowest of the year. And I think when attendance gets that low, you're going to get mostly just the hardcores coming, right? You're not going to attract the casuals.
Right.
So, yeah, you could tell there was a lot of boring chants, a lot of, you know, just snarky sort of behavior. And this card is just, I don't know. I mean, it was probably sold, of course, on the Battle Royal. That was unique, a tag team Battle Royal. And the Piper's Pit that we're about to get to. And it would have been Piper's return to MSG after a year or whatever. So, but the undercard is just not very inspiring. We've already talked about it. There's no heat. There's no feuds.
Yeah, it's like nothing to even talk about. It's just the matches are okay. Like there's no hot match yet. So it's just kind of
Everything is 2 stars, 1.5 stars, that sort of stuff. The Rougeaus were still new. But I like this match for what it was.
Yeah, I wish it was more to it, that's all. I wish it was longer, that's how much I liked it.
Yep, yeah, Jacques got over with the crowd. Sheik is still over as a heel.
You know,
easy heat for him. He doesn't have to do anything. And he's more over than most of the guys on the roster. So the crowd was totally into this match. There was no boring chance for this one. And it had a clean finish, which was tough to come by this evening. So, yeah, it's actually one of the better matches of the night. I went 2 stars as well.
All right, well, business is now about to pick up. As we head to the ring, taking a break from the action, as the Fink is in the ring, and he introduces Roddy Piper to a huge pop for a special Piper's Pit. Piper says he isn't used to people cheering for him, and he's not running for president, and is still the same no-good son of a bitch he's always been. And the crowd is just ballistic here. Like, everything he says, it is going crazy. The first thing he thought of when he returned to wrestling was getting tired of seeing Adonis on TV talking about how tough he was. So he went out and broke his arm, and there'll be no more flower shop anymore. And puts over the Mets and tells the fans to have faith for their home team as the boos turn to wild cheers. When he first mentions the Mets, they boo. And then he's like, you know, I'm not giving up. Don't give up on your team. And then, of course, we'll get more on the Mets in a minute. He's been down before. He knows what it feels like to get beat and beat people up. He says the last time he was in MSG was WrestleMania 1, which, of course, is not true. And one of his guests tonight was his tag partner that night. He then brings out Bobby Heenan and Paul Orndorff to massive booing and heat from the fans. Heenan's decked out in a suit, and he's the only one that comes out at first, and Piper asks what's going on. Heenan brings up the Red Sox as a joke, and Piper bets him 50 or 100 or 1,000 and then 10,000 that the Mets will win the World Series. Bobby accepts the 10K bet, and Piper calls him an idiot. Piper jokes about Bobby's rented suits, and Bobby says they're slacks. Piper says his sisters wear slacks, and Bobby says, well, Piper wears a skirt. Piper reminds him it's a kilt and says he better remember it or else he'll pay. Bobby says he's waiting for the proper time and intro for Orndorff to come out. Bobby then gushes over Mr. Wonderful, and he enters. Orndorff marches out to Real American. He's showered with booze. Piper reminds Orndorff that the last time he saw him in MSG, he was laying on his back. Orndorff shoves him, and we nearly get a brawl as both men strip down. Bobby keeps the peace as Gorilla wonders if Piper is really ready for this type of action. Piper asks if his theme music is original, because it rings a bell. Orndorff says the music was written for him, and Hogan stole it. Piper says he was on the album, and he knows who the song is made for. And he asks Bobby if he could have been any more original in picking out a theme. Piper tells Orndorff to argue intelligently instead of wanting to fight, and then basically says he's too dumb to do so. Orndorff is furious this whole time as Bobby's keeping him at bay. Piper said that he told the people a year ago, when they were cheering Orndorff, what was going on. Bobby says you won't be responsible for it. Orndorff does it if Roddy keeps it up. Piper says Orndorff has no friends and anyone he can tag up with because he's a loser and turned on everyone. Bobby says Orndorff has friends, and Piper says Dr. Ruth should be his friend. Orndorff says you can't make Rin Tin Tin out of Lassie, and mocks Piper for beating up an old guy and ripping. Hang on, one second, sorry. Beating up a guy and ripping someone's dress apart. Oh, 100-pound guy and Jimmy Hart. Sorry, there it is. Beating up a 100-pound guy and Jimmy Hart, ripping up someone's dress, and he can see why he relates to the people of New York City. Bobby says he can name 100 people that would tag with Orndorff, and Piper asks him to name one, and Bobby comes up empty to a big pop. Piper says, Shirley Temple's too old. This is like just pop culture madness right here in the 80s. Just everything just getting dropped. And then says, maybe Punky Brewster. Orndorff and Bobby debate potential partners, but Bobby says Paul always does 98% of the work during his tag matches. And in the great line, Piper says, yeah, but he does 100% of the losing. Piper says he'll give them a week to come up with a partner and then takes a nap in the corner while he waits. Bobby says, finally says Harley Race could be his partner and drops the mic. Bobby puts over Harley and Orndorff adds, and he likes Boston. Bobby says Piper's not well-liked either and asks him to come up with a partner on the spot. Piper debates with his manager, and who is no one. And then a fan, and of course, that we know is Vladimir, jumps up on the apron to confer. Bobby and Paul mock him, but Piper says Vlad has an idea. And Vlad yells, Hulk Hogan! The crowd goes nuts. Piper pokes Bobby in the eyes and walks off as Orndorff and Bobby flip out in the ring. Fantastic pit. Just all-time classic. Banana. The heat was just bananas here. I mean, just crazy for these guys. Off the hook. I like the touch of having Vladimir get up and yell it. And I thought Bobby was great. Just the whole thing, just the atmosphere and everything about it was fantastic. What'd you think, Kel?
Oh, yeah, this was amazing. A breath of fresh air after, you know, going through the mediocre undercard matches. And Piper at this time, wow. This was the Piper I fell in love with, actually, for the first time, because this is when I got into wrestling just a few months earlier. So I was aware Piper had been a heel, but I wasn't watching at that time. So this was the Piper I first got to know. I even had a Piper shirt, where, you know, one of those old style ones where you got like the iron on image on the front. Yeah, I had one.
Nice.
Yes, I know. I was pretty cool in elementary school with that. And yeah, I mean, he was just a master at this time. you know, he's now a baby face, but he's still very much like heel Roddy.
Right.
Basically he's just not an asshole now.
Yeah, he hasn't changed too much. He's just, you know, who he's against.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He's still very sharp, quick-witted and all that. It was really cool. And then to see Heenan come out, another great all-time talker. So what a confrontation we have here. Piper and Heenan, I guess they didn't really mix it up too much over the years. So it was great to see them really get it on here in a battle in the ring on the mic. Orndorff, of course, was the top heel in the territory at the time. And the crowd was just rocking for this super cool moment. Vlad getting involved. This one had a little bit of everything. Saying Hogan's going to be his partner. That was huge at the time. Wow. Hogan and Piper were going to be tag teaming. That was just incredible. So yeah, I love this. I love Piper just leaving, drops the mic, does the I love you hand sign thing that he always did down the aisle. That was like his burn spot where he, you know, nobody could touch him after that. And yeah, what a great segment. These live Piper's pits at MSG, you can't beat them, right? We had the one with Bruno about a year ago, and now you have this one. It's a real treat.
Yeah, the live pits. I mean, really, Piper hasn't changed. He's just directing. He's directing his venom at heels instead of faces. It's really all it's come down to. The barbs haven't changed. It's just he's now making fun of guys we hate too instead of guys we like. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. But the crowd definitely woke up because they were pretty flat during the first half of this match. So it was a good timing. That was a good part on the, whoever was booking that night. I mean, obviously probably Vince, but to put the pit here. With this show kind of not flat, but you know, match, but no real storytelling, nothing for the crowd to get invested in per se. This was great. So, the Mets, I totally had forgotten about the Mets Red Sox bet, which is pretty funny. And Vladimir, what can we say about Vladimir? JR and I have a picture with Vladimir. Can't argue with the legacy of the super fan.
Although it looks like
he's gotten younger as times progress, because there he had like a fucking beard. When you and I saw him, he was like clean shaven, no facial hair. It's like he's de-aged. It's funny.
Yeah, I mean, he looks almost the same as he did then. It's pretty, like, at least like age-wise, it's pretty crazy.
I know.
It's too bad they didn't pull a young, probably not young, but John D'Amato out of the crowd to talk
That's
to
right.
him. He was in attendance at the show.
Here he is.
So there you go.
Imagine we said, who would you like as my tag team partner? Some young who is
sitting with some
nice who. It was a great segment. Piper's on fire, and I agree with you, Kel. It doesn't matter who the opponent is, or who the guest is, I should say. When Piper's kind of, I mean, live pits, they're live regardless, whether they're whether they're taped or actually legitimately live. Even when he's, you know, at Superstars tapings, they're technically live there. Mm-hmm. But it's different when you're in an arena and you have to do like five a night as compared to being in the ring for a major one.
Yeah, there's a difference between the ring and the set, too. Like, that's a big difference. You know, when you just being in the ring on that stage, on that platform, just feels so different than just at the little set in the back end of the arena.
Right.
I think that adds a big part to it, too. Now, it's definitely something to have it a special deal in MSG like this, especially with Orndorff and him. I mean, Orndorff's red hot right now as a heel. It was really well done, and they did a nice job setting up the big match for next month too. So I thought overall it was a really productive segment across the board. And it was entertaining too. I don't think it really lingered too much, and they got to the point and everything. Everything was really funny, and Piper was on. And like you said, Kelly, he hasn't really changed yet. He's still Roddy Piper. He's just getting cheered because he's beating the shit out of Adonis and Jimmy Hart and those guys instead of, you know, going after Hulk Hogan and Mr. T and Snuka.
Yep.
Good question, guys. Would it have helped for Hogan to be there?
No, because it was, I don't think you'd needed him at all. Just his name being announced was enough.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't think he needed to be there. You want to save the him and Piper being together. We kind of got it on Saturday's main event, but you want to save it for there, I think.
Yeah, no, that's true, too. That's true. And it's Piper. It's not like Piper needed backup or anything. You know,
no. So. And they're not friends. You know what I mean? They're not portrayed to be buddies. Like, he's just... We don't even know if Hogan's even accepted. You know, we'll find out. So I think it's pretty good. I think the way they did it was perfect. I don't think Hogan needed to be there. Because if Hogan's there, then he's going to probably wrestle, you know. And just, yeah. No, I'm fine with it the way they went.
Good segment, though. Crowd was hot.
That was awesome.
Liked it a lot.
Yeah. All right, let's head back to the ring as we continue our tag team roulette as Jim Brunzel, the other half of the Killer Bees, takes on Mike Rotundo of the New U.S. Express, I guess. I don't know, whatever. Interesting face-face matchup here as our tag team continues. Rotundo comes out to Stars and Stripes Forever, which I think is funny. They're amping up music for these guys at this point because, I mean, he gets no reaction. I mean, just completely on fumes. Gorilla, Allen, Gene all put each other over in a weird spot where they're just, like, gushing about each other. Gene talks about knowing Brunzel his whole life and says he is All-American timber. We start with a lockup as Gorilla hopes for a good scientific match. The two trade off offense standing on the mat, and Gene draws comps between their pasts and career paths. Gorilla says even though they're nice guys, MSG does funny things to people, and Al says people will resort to whatever they have to do to get in the record books of this temple known as MSG. The stalemate of offense continues until Brunzel is able to get a head scissors and grind away as Gorilla talks more about the importance of winning at MSG. Gorilla asks Gene to talk about Dan Spivey's injury, and he completely puts Gene on the spot here. He has no fucking clue what Gorilla's talking about, I think, and he just completely... his recovery is up in the air, and his return is as well. He just completely bullshits it. They say the surgery was successful, but never mention what the injury was. The match resets as Brunzel starts to work the leg, but Rotundo comes back with some forearm blows and an atomic drop for two. The commentary is so bland here, just filled with basic wrestling platitudes about wins and losses, and the two guys are just feeling each other out. Brunzel lands some uppercuts and gets a jackknife cover for two, as Al says a win here is more important than the purse. Rotundo counters Brunzel with a monkey flip and blocks a sunset flip with a hard right hand. Rotundo slams Brunzel for two, but Brunzel grabs a small package for two count as well. Brunzel goes back to the uppercuts and hooks an abdominal stretch as Gene asks why those are called European uppercuts, and Al explains. Gorilla asks Brunzel, says Brunzel's not doing the abdominal stretch properly, as always, and Rotundo breaks free and gets one of his own that Gorilla actually likes. Jim hip tosses free, and the two collide on charges and collapse, but Brunzel recovers first and gets a sleeper. Rotundo powers out and follows with a suplex attempt, but Brunzel slips out of it and hits an atomic drop. Brunzel charges and Rotundo catches him on his shoulders, but the momentum takes both out to the floor in a very hard bump, leading to a double count out. The crowd did not like that finish at all. And again, this was good in a technically proficient way, but not much heat or excitement, like, at all. It's very, very flat. Gene says the purists would have liked this, as he keeps trying to sell how good of a match this was. Both guys look good and wrestled well, but again, just no juice, no energy. And if things had gotten heated late, like a lot of times, you know, you get these face-face matches, and at the end, like, they're really thrown down. We didn't get that here. They just kind of tumbled to the floor. So I went 2.5. I think given the talent of these guys, if they had more chemistry and more energy, I think it could have been definitely a higher grade. But as is, it just kind of falls flat. Scott, what do you think?
Well, I agree with you. I gave it 2.5. I liked it. I always like watching two baby faces wrestle because they get greedy and they get a little chippy and they start like just punching each other. And I always love seeing that. But I agree with you. It seemed very flat and out of kilter for the fans. Rotundo's definitely like, you know, like a zombie. He's working. Yeah, it's getting to the point now. He's like, all right, well,
the motions.
Yeah, I'm pretty much cooked. Yeah, and then beginning, like, Gorilla and Alfred and Mean, like, hey, my pal, hey, my friend. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you three idiots? this is one of those shows. Mean Gene's bad enough with the like innuendos and like the inside jokes and the inside stories, but when all three of them are doing it, you're like, all right, guys, I know the match is boring, but can we get your head out of your asses and like commentate?
I have some thoughts on Gene. I'm going to share later my issues with him, but yes, no, I agree with you 100%. It's like,
I mean, enough's enough.
And this match completely, they just like are fucking whatever during this whole thing. I mean, so if you're going to win the match to move up the kind, it all feels like. That is giving these like just general generic wrestling talking points during the whole match.
Yep,
it's
absolutely.
Really fucking annoying.
They're like on cruise control like fucking Rotundo was.
Oh god, he looks so checked out.
Yeah, I always liked the U.S. Express tights though. Those are always cool. But yeah, he was definitely on cruise control. But still, I mean, 2.5. I mean, the match was still serviceable, and I feel like they worked hard. But you could just tell everybody to see the crowd, Rotundo, and the announcers were all like on cruise control, and we still had a fairly decent match, Kel.
Yeah, it was too cruise control for me. I went 1.5 stars.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just like I made a note right away that I'll be impressed if this match gets over with the tough MSG crowd.
Definitely not.
Because it didn't. I didn't think it had a hope in hell. A scientific match. I had hopes for it because, you know, I'd like to see something different, you know, click or something, you know, but no. So many boring chants, very loud. At one point, Gorilla says the fans are really enjoying this one when the boring chants were at their loudest. So obviously that was sarcastic. The commentary team just didn't have much to work with tonight. They couldn't commentate during Piper's Pit. So the best thing they had to remain silent for. Otherwise, they're thrown into these random matches with no heat. It was a pretty strange evening for them, I'm sure. Like you said, JR, yeah, technically well worked, but yeah, this one just didn't do it for me. And we get the double count out finish. They couldn't even have one guy go over the other. So yet another disappointing finish. And yeah, this card can't get to the end soon enough for me, guys.
All right.
Yeah, it's pretty flat. So, all right, well, why don't we take a break? What do you think so far, JR? It's been entertaining. It's been kind of a unique show. You take a risk with a show like this.
Yeah.
And obviously we've seen the risks. It's everybody seems like kind of in like limbo in terms of energy level and commentating. But having said that, though, I've been entertained so far. There has been a uniqueness to it, no?
Like, if I would have just, like, if we weren't doing this show, you know, and I was just throwing on shit on the network and whatever, you know, just, like, hanging out on my couch at night watching stuff and this came on, and I'd probably be fine with it. But honestly, in this parade of MSG shows that we've been watching, to then have to sit through this, it's like, you know, when we have a week to watch it, you know what I mean? It's like, it's 2.5 hours, and this is what I got to fucking watch for like 3 nights across my week. It deflates the show a lot more for me than like if I just happened to watch this randomly one time. Like if I had watched this like 5 years ago, I probably would have enjoyed it more. But when I'm like taking notes and having to pay attention, like slogging through some of these matches was just rough. It was just, yeah, I can't say I've enjoyed it a ton. The Piper thing definitely beefed it up, but it's tough having... You're right, Kelly, when comparing it to Battle Bowl, because we actually talked about this on Letters from Center Stage, Alan and I, how Battle Bowl, in theory sounds fun, but when the match is this parade of, you know, heatless after heatless match with no direction or storyline, they just get old after a while. It's like, it's one thing if it's like fucking PWG or something, you know, like you have like these great guys going out there and whatever, they're putting on 4-star matches or 5-star matches or whatever. Versus like these guys are slopping through like 2-star matches at 10-minute clips with a dead crowd. You know, it's a tough watch.
Yeah, I totally agree. The Piper's Pit segment's all time great. Wow. Well, at least we're getting through this fast. it was a tough watch. It took me 3 sittings. To watch this one, which is usually my max for one of these shows, so that speaks for the quality.
Mm. Yeah, I was able to slog through the whole thing in one fell swoop today, and it was at times it was a bit of a struggle. All right, when we come back though, we'll have the continuation of our show. I think we have 4 matches left, including the main event, which is the reason why we have all these tag team wrestlers on this show. But first, let's take a breather because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is legendary ring announcer and WWE Hall of Famer, the Think, Howard Finkel, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast.
Everybody's got a price. Everybody's gonna pay. 'Cause the $1 million man
Hi, Nation. Welcome back. Episode 461, talking the October 1986 Madison Square Garden House Show. Myself, Scott and Kelly. And, you know, all week I slog through this MSG show, and then I sit at work on Monday just sitting there wondering how the night's going to go. You got Raw, which can be hit or miss. And then when I think about you guys, I feel even worse. But you know what? Tomorrow's Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the weekend will be here before you know it. And speaking of thinking of you, that is a song playing under us tonight. That is Janet Jackson, of course. And that will lead us into this week's Pop Culture Corner with Scott Criscolo. Scott, have at it.
Yeah, Janet, baby. It's our girl, JR. Janet, her first of what will be probably a few number one singles, When I Think of You, playing in the background. Talking about good song, and more to come. Mr. Chadley likes to give us, not give us crap, it's not really our fault, obviously, but when the top tens are not great, and this one's really not great either. Number two, the song Typical Male by Tina Turner, which is one that I really don't remember. Number three, True Colors by Cyndi Lauper. We like that song.
We do. I don't really like it at all.
Really?
No.
It's a good song. Number four, Throwing It All Away by Genesis, which is a good song. Number five, Heartbeat by the one and only Don Johnson. We know that's not good. How the hell was that number five? I guess because Miami Vice was still still on.
One of the top shows on TV.
Exactly. Number six, Two of Hearts, Stacey Q. Been floating around the top ten for quite a while now. At number seven, Don't Forget Me When I'm Gone, Glass Tiger. Don't forget. That's another good catchy song with Bryan Adams singing in the background. Number eight, I Didn't Mean to Turn You On by Robert Palmer. Number nine, All Cried Out by Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam with Full Force featuring Paul Anthony and Bowlegged Lou.
That's a good song, and made even better by the fact that a guy named Bowlegged Lou is involved.
Bowlegged Lou's in it, exactly. And number 10, because his first album in, 3 years was released in 1986, The Doctor's Guy, Mr. Billy Joel, with A Matter of Trust at number 10, as The Bridge came out in 1986, which is one of his more kind of unheralded albums, but had really good stuff on it, including that song, A Matter of Trust. So there's your top 10.
Bowlegged Lou is part of Full Force. American group of R&B hip-hop singers and producers from Brooklyn, featuring B-Fine, Shy Shy, Paul Anthony, Bowlegged Lou, Curl TT, and Baby G.
There you go.
They appeared
Baby
in the 1990...
Baby G was in a band 30 years before... she was in a band some years before she was born.
They appeared in a 1990 comedy film House Party and its sequel as gangster villains of Kid and Play.
Of Kid and Play? Interesting. So there you go.
Actually,
there
was your top... they just had an album in fucking 2014.
Did they really?
Yeah.
We got to find some Bowlegged Lou then for the post-Yacht Rock beds.
I guess so. I'm going to play it tonight. Well, I'm going to play All Cried Out to end the show tonight. How about that?
Okay. All right. So there you go. Of course, this came out, the up-to-date Billboard, since this house show is on a Monday. This came out 2 days earlier on Saturday, the 18th. And number one, as you heard coming into the segment, When I Think of You by our girl, Janet Jackson. All right, JR, only one movie. A very well-known movie, though. But one movie came out on Friday the 17th, but a good one. Made $52,293,000. One of the more unheralded Tom Cruise films. And it's actually a sequel. A sequel came out almost 36 years probably, or 37 years after the first movie came out. The movie is Godfather The Color of Money. Oh.
Of course, that was Tom Hanks. And no, you didn't get that. All cred out. Bonus cookie points if you guys know the name of the R&B group that did a cover of that song in August of 1997.
Blackstreet?
No. It's a girl group.
Oh.
Kelly, any thoughts?
1997. TLC.
TLC. Nope.
Allure, the group Allure released that song.
I like Exposé.
They played that on Fly a decent amount, that version by Allure.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Felsen is a former pool hustler turned successful liquor salesman. One night he meets Vincent Lauria, a young charismatic pool player and video gamer who plays small-time nine-ball games while working as a sales clerk at a toy store. Eddie, who makes stakes bets for players, persuades Vincent and his girlfriend manager Carmen to go on the road where he can teach Vincent how to make more money through hustling pool. Starring, of course, Paul Newman and Tom Cruise, as well as Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, Helen Shaver, John Turturro, Bill Cobbs, and Forrest Whitaker as Amos.
And, of course, that was the sequel to one of the best movies of the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, The Hustler. Mm-hmm. Eddie Felsen, and, of course, Jackie Gleason played the real-life awesome billiards player, the great Minnesota Fats. Good movie, actually. Exceptional movie, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. Kind of depressing, though. Right, Kel? More depressing than you thought it was if you first saw it, right?
The Hustler? Yeah, it was at a time when they were starting to make, you know, a little more darker movies. Yeah.
It came out really good. What did it come out? 65?
I want to say earlier than that. 61, I want to say.
Wow, so this really is 35 years later. Wow.
Yeah, Paul Newman was really young in The Hustler.
Yeah.
The Color of Money is a good movie, too. Scorsese directed it.
Yeah, no, it's an exceptional movie. And that's the only movie that came out on Friday.
Minnesota Fats should definitely be like an indie wrestler name. That someone's missing out big time and not using that name. There's some big fat guy from Minnesota.
With a Kent Herbeck jersey on or something?
Yes, there you go.
All right. So, okay, so let's go to baseball. And as you heard in the Piper's Pit, it is the off day of the 1986. No one's listening to you. Kel, you will enjoy this. Actually, you won't.
Why will he enjoy it?
Your team sucked in 85.
Actually, this was the first World Series I ever watched.
So. All right. Well, you picked a good one.
Yeah.
Obviously, we had two of probably the greatest championship series at that point in history. The Mets and Astros went six, but it was loaded with drama. Of course, the Mets won game six in 16 innings at the Astrodome to win the pennant, while the Angels were one out away from vanquishing JR's reviled Boston Red Sox. And then Dave Henderson, of course, hit the home run to force the tie. And then that made it 3-2. And then the Red Sox blew them out back-to-back games at Fenway to win the American League pennant. And then the first two games that weekend, it wasn't the Orioles, Art Adano. They won it 3 years earlier. Game one, pitching duel, Ron Darling and Bruce Hurst. And it was a Tim Tuffle error that went between his legs. Red Sox won game one, 1-0. And then game two was the matchup everybody wanted to see. Last year's Cy Young Award winner, Doc Gooden, who went 24-4, against this year's AL Cy Young Award winner, Roger Clemens, who went 24-4. It was not close. Doc did not pitch great. Clemens really didn't pitch that great either, but Doc really didn't pitch that great. Red Sox banged out 21 hits in one game two.
Can you afford to pay me to rush a run? I don't know!
He didn't throw out the first pitch. Red Sox won game two, 9-3. So they led the series 2-0. As we were doing this house show tonight, which is why Piper made the bet with Bobby Heenan, and we'll leave it at that. And when we do the November house, we will do the... Hey, it added a good Piper's Pit, so zip it. We will get into the conclusion of what happened in this World Series on our next show next week. So we will leave it at that. Because I'm looking forward to this even more than talking about my beloved 86 Mets, and that is time to take the field.
A battle of real champions, not those scrub teams I played in October 1986.
Please. We'll get to your team in a minute. Mr. Nelson, you in absentia last week with a win.
Yes.
How about that, huh?
You weren't even proud.
You didn't have to pick the Rough Riders or the Argos. All right. Gentlemen, it is week seven the next day, or the day before this house show. Week seven of the 1986 NFL season. Let's get started, boys. We begin at Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati, where the Bengals host Mr. Moon and the Houston Oilers. JR?
Bengals Oilers, that you said?
Yes. At Riverfront.
I'll go with the Oilers.
Okay. Kel?
I'll take the Bengals.
Boomer Esiason throws for a .92. Bengals win 31-28. Right. Let's go to RFK, where the Redskins host the St. Redskins host the St. Louis Cardinals. Kel?
Skins.
Yeah, Skins.
They are. Jay Schrader throws for .232, and former Heisman Trophy winner George Rogers rushes for a .118. Redskins win 28-21. Let's go up to Rich Stadium in Buffalo. The Bills hosting the Indianapolis Colts. JR?
I'll go Buffalo at home in this one.
Mm-hmm. Kel?
Ooh, the Bills were pretty bad in 86. I'll go with the road team. I'll go with the Colts.
Jim Kelly throws for .252. Bills win 24-13.
K-gun between your eyes, bitch.
There you go. Let's go to Chad's backyard, Fulton County Stadium, where the Falcons host your San Francisco 49ers, Kel.
My San Francisco 49ers.
I don't know. It's not your 49ers. I know.
No. Niners.
Niners?
Yeah, I'll go Niners here. Matt Ryan throws at 300 yards.
Nope. David Archer throws for a .176, but the game ends in a 10-10 tie.
Oh, garbage.
It is garbage. They should never have done ties back
then. I think if either of us actually predict a tie in these weeks, it should count as like 5 points.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's head to Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh. The Steelers host the AFC champion New England Patriots. JR.
Well, the Pats usually own the Steelers, so I'm going to go with the Pats in this one.
Okay. Kel?
I'll take the home team, Steelers.
Steve Grogan throws for .243. Yeah. Pats throw a shutout, 34 to nothing.
Never take Pittsburgh against New England. It's been proven.
Pretty much ever, yeah. All right, let's go to the vet in Philly. Fucking toilet. Where the Eagles host the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, I got to take the Eagles.
Yeah, I'll take the Eagles.
Yeah, you both suck dick. But the Cowboys win, 17-14. Steve Ballure throws for 244. Suck it, Jaworski. Let's go down to the Superdome. The Saints host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, Jay. God. I guess I'll go with the Saints.
Yeah, I'll go with the Saints, too.
Saints win, 38-7.
Jesus, Tampa crowd of about terrible.
Crowd of about 2,000 at the Superdome.
Andrew Reese.
All right,
there.
Let's go to another dome, the Metrodome in Minneapolis. The Vikings host your world champion, Chicago Bears. JR.
I believe it's Kelly starting to go first.
Oh, Kelly, go ahead. Sorry, I'm coming.
Bears.
Yeah,
Bears. Yep. Tommy Kramer throws for 239. Vikings win 23-7.
About
that,
gross.
Huh? Let's go down to the Orange Bowl. Mr. Marino and the Dolphins hosting the Raiders.
Yeah, I'll take Marino at home.
Yeah, I'll take the Fins, too.
Marino throws for 286, but the Raiders win 30-28.
Tough week.
Let's go to Cleveland, where the Browns host the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, I'll go with the whose turn? Me?
It's a 2-4-6. It's your turn, JR.
I'll go with the dog pound.
Yeah, me too. Browns.
Randy Wright. Bet you neither of you know even know who he is. He threw for 277. Packers win on the road.
Jesus.
17-14. You guys are awful.
Yeah. Not a good week at all.
Let us go to the Kingdome in Seattle, where the Seahawks host the New York Football Giants. Kel.
Giants.
Yeah, Giants.
Seahawks win 17-12.
Come on.
Oh, my God.
That could very well be, though. Could be. I'm not saying it is, but it could be the last time the Giants lose a game this year. Could be.
Yeah.
Think about it. Let's go out to Anaheim. The Rams host the Detroit Lions. JR.
Rams.
Kel?
Rams.
Eric Hipple throws for 316. But Eric Dickerson rushes for .130. Rams win 14-10.
Break the schneid.
Game of the week. We go to Arrowhead. Will JR's theory hold? Chiefs host the San Diego Superchargers.
Chiefs at home.
Kel? Chiefs at home. Kel?
Yeah, the Chargers were nothing special in 86. I'll go with the Chiefs.
Dan Fouts throws for 200 yards, but the Chiefs win 42-41.
Wow. Shoot. Woo. Chiefs at home.
Andy and Adam Murray playing Madden in that one, huh? No defense. And finally, on this Monday night, JR, it's pretty good that this house show is boring the shit out of you because you're not paying attention anyway because you're watching ABC Monday Night Football from the Meadowlands where the Jets, Jets host Mr. Elway and the Denver Broncos.
Ooh.
I'll go with Denver.
Ooh, well, I'll take your home team. I'll take the Jets.
Oh, ye of little faith, Mr. Rosero. Jets win 22-10.
That's 2 out of 3 weeks. I didn't pick that, but it cost me. Oh, we finished tied yet again, Kelly. I was leading for most of the way there.
Johnny Hector, which is the next throwback I'm having JR by, rushed for 76 yards. Wait a minute. John Elway threw for 145. Do I even want to know what the fuck Ken O'Brien threw for in this game? I'm going to click the score real quick.
Sloppy
miss. Yeah, this is bad. Must have been a good defensive game for the Jets. Let's see. Well, it was 22-0 at the half. Let's see how they scored their points. Johnny Hector, there you go, 1 yard touchdown run. A couple of Pat Leahy field goals, a Wesley Walker touchdown catch from Ken O'Brien, and a safety. There you go. So, what did Ken O'Brien do in this game? If he didn't, Jesus. He must have got hurt because Pat Ryan played too. So, something might have happened there. Anyway, Jets win.
All right, so after three attempts of this, Kelly, you lead by one. We was 8-8 week one, 11-10 last week, and 6-6 this week. So
6-6.
Okay. next week may be the final one because I'm not going to be here for the December.
We have to send him in ahead.
We'll have December. Okay, yeah, 2 more months.
Wait till we do the baseball games in 87.
Yes. And guess what, Mr. Nelson? On October 20th, we're about 10 days into the 1986-87 NHL season.
Yeah.
Can your defending Campbell Conference champion, Calgary Flames, repeat? And can the Montreal Canadiens repeat? Let's hope not, because we don't like them. The only one game in the NHL this night, it was at the Forum in Montreal, and the Canadiens actually lost 5-4 to the Washington Capitals.
Good.
And that is your pop culture report.
All right, let's go back to the ring for our next matchup. And that is the other half of the tag team champion British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, taking on the other half of the Dream Team, Greg Valentine. The old rivals back at it again. The Bulldogs still can't shed the Dream Team, still hanging around. I'm glad we actually didn't get, you know, Davey and Brett. I thought it was nice to mix things up. Davey and Matilda entered to rule Britannia as well, get a nice warm welcome. Hammer's out alone and takes a swipe at the pup as Gene asks what kind of man would kick a dog. They debate what Hammer's motivations would be there, and Gorilla reminds us of the nightmare in Chicago for the Dream Team. Says these teams will meet again, I'm sure. Davey shoves Hammer down and then blocks a kick and slaps the Hammer before landing a headbutt and shoving him down again. Davey works the arm as Gene puts over their physiques of the Bulldogs, and Gorilla wonders if walking Matilda will eat into their workout time. Davey flips around while working the arm and keeping Hammer at bay. Hammer scoops Davey up and drops him with a backbreaker to take over and then goes to work on the lower back, grabbing some near falls. Hammer hooks in a bear hug that Davey claps out of and grabs one of his own. Hammer punches free and starts to work the midsection before decking Davey in the back of the neck. Hammer shoves Davey to the floor and drills him with a shoulder breaker for two when he comes back in. Hammer follows with a nice vertical suplex for two and then goes for the figure four, but Davey blocks it with a small package for a near fall. Hammer met Davey with a knee to the hip and picks apart the legs, mixing in some really nice holds. Davey works free and took over, focusing on the lower back before twisting Hammer to a grapevine Boston Crab. Hammer hangs in and eventually grabs the ropes with both blocking suplex attempts until Davey finally takes Hammer over with a stiff one for a two count. Davey follows with a running power slam, but Hammer barely gets his foot on the ropes to break the count. Hammer rolls outside and Davey follows where they trade some heavy blows. Hammer catches Davey coming back in and chops away and then drops a hard elbow to the chest. Hammer finally hooks in the figure four, but Davey holds on and wiggles to the ropes. Hammer hangs on to the hold till he's forced to break, and Davey's just hurting badly now. Hammer kicks away at the leg, but Davey flips him to the mat and punches away with fury. Davey dropkicks Hammer and then clobbers him in the back of the head with a hard elbow. Hammer trips Davey and grabs the top rope to steal a win. I fucking hate that finish. The pin looks so awkward. It comes out of nowhere where Hammer's like standing up. It's like, I love Greg Valentine. I feel like he does like great work across the board, but he loves that finish. I feel like he's done it more than once, and it's just terrible where he stands and pins him and holds on to the top rope. I just can't stand it. It just looked terrible. The match is really fun. A lot of hard-hitting offense, and they have great chemistry. I mean, we've seen that before. A lot of good flow in their matches. Both look strong. Hammer has to cheat to win. Good to see him picking up wins and staying relevant, even though the Dream Team's fading. So that part of it I liked. The finish bugged me, though. I went 3 stars in this. What do you have, Kelly?
Same rating, 3 stars, and basically the same rationale. I really liked 99% of the match, but the finish was crap. Not only was it just looked stupid, it was kind of executed sloppy, mm-hmm. and also I think Davey Boy should have went over in this one based on how the match was structured, with Valentine controlling most of it, and then you had Davey's big comeback, and then you had this stupid finish. But, you know, the majority of the match was really good. Stiff work, as you would imagine and expect from Valentine. Davey Boy, yeah, they work well together. Davey Boy looked really good. I liked his hope spots. The small package that he almost caught Valentine with early was cool. I want to mention something Gorilla said on commentary, where he claimed that Valentine ended Chief J. Strongbow's career with the figure four leg lock, which is not only not true. I mean, Strongbow wrestled for another several years in New York after that. But, well, I won't spoil things. But, it, yeah, anyway, needless to say, not true by a long shot.
Freezing cold takes by Gorilla, immediately wrong.
Yeah. Very wrong. This, like I said, very good match. Just the finish. I actually thought it was going to be a double count at one point when they spilled to the outside, because that's often how these things end up, especially with two guys that they don't have beaten. But the finish bugged me. It's continuing the trend. Not only are we getting all these mediocre matches, we're getting a bunch of crummy finishes to them. And yeah, but 3 stars, definitely the match of the evening.
Yeah, your official match time, 12:57. I gave it a 3.5. I loved it. I'm Greg Valentine is just easily one of the greatest methodical, just in-ring workers in the history of this business. And methodical is the key word. Because, you know, they always say the whole, it takes 20 minutes for him to get a match started and blah, blah, blah. But that's what makes it great. He just goes step by step, goes one move to the next move to the next move to the next move. And he made Davey Boy even look like $1 million. And, I mean, Davey Boy didn't need help with that. He was, you know, he's in a pretty good groove at this point as well. But he just knows how to work a match. He knows how to tell the story. He knows how to go from page to page to page. Usually his epilogue sucks, and you're right. That pin is – he looks like he's banging him. That pin's fucking garbage. I don't know why he does that, but he's just so methodical. And he just knows how to work the story. And that's why I think he was great with Flair back in the 70s and early 80s in Crockett and working with guys like Steamboat. He just knows how to tell the story from point A to point B. I mean, having a dad who was a Hall of Fame wrestler doesn't hurt matters. I had written down in my notes that I thought it was weird that Hammer wrestled Davey here, not Brett, but obviously they weren't giving a shit about that kind of thing tonight. Davey, of course, the big thing, and you mentioned JR when you were going through the analysis, Davey did pull out what would be eventually known as the sharpshooter, yet the three fucking morons at the broadcast table had no idea what to do with it. Oh, he's using this figure thing with a grapevine and something, and three fucking idiots. I mean, I don't know.
Well, it wasn't outside of Japan.
It wasn't really used. I mean, I don't know how they're supposed to know what it is.
But it was bad. But I mean, still, these guys are professionals. They should at least find a way to at least kind of smooth that over. Oh, look at this unique European figure four. I don't know, something with it that at least comes out better.
Yeah.
It's like this thing that's a grapevine figure thing. And guys, come on. Can't you improvise better than that? I mean, come on. But Davey ratcheted up pretty good. I got to give him props. He actually cranked it up pretty good. And I think with the combination of the pit and the Rotundo Brunzel, they kind of went back down. But I think the crowd woke back up on this match. Obviously, one half of the tag team champions in the ring doesn't hurt, as well as the fact that, you know, you're dealing with the Hammer, who's fucking great. So, but yeah, Davey Boy losing a – and you said this, Kel. Davey Boy losing a Brett. Let's just say that they do the way you're supposed to do it. And Brett and Davey Boy fought here, and Brett won. That's fine because you're beginning a feud with a legit. But why do you have Hammer win? Hammer could put on one of the great matches and eat a pin. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't get why Hammer had to win this match. It made no sense.
I mean, that I'm fine with too. Like, you're mixing things up a bit. Like, Hammer's still going to be a guy they probably push a bit and is legitimate and he's believable. Like, I don't think Davey, who's set up as a tag specialist, losing this match to Hammer like hurts him at all. I don't know. I don't think he had to be protected in this setting. If it's Dream Team versus Bulldogs and they were to win like a non-title, maybe. But I don't know. I'm never like a big hater on like tag team guys losing singles matches. Like, I don't think it hurts them that much, unless it's like, you know, if like Moondog Rex had beat him or something. But Valentine's portrayed as like a top star on the heel side.
Oh, no, exactly. I'm not. Yeah. I'm trying not to. I'm not like being hypocritical with myself. I'm just saying, if you're thinking of, we've already talked about the fact that Dream Team is pretty much dead.
Yeah, but I think they're reheating Valentine a bit.
That's fine. I mean, if that's the way they're going, then I'm fine with it. But I mean, if they were trying to keep the Bulldogs going, and I mean, it's not a big deal. Again, he cheated a win, so it's not the end of the world. But the problem I have with those pins, and even Brett does it later, and we'll talk about that in a second. They grab things too late.
Yeah,
like literally, he does the pin, and like the three is really about to go down, and then he puts his hand on it. Like, well, they waited too long.
I kind of feel like
they made it so clumsy.
Yeah, maybe, but on the other hand, like, whatever. Kayfabe-wise, doesn't make sense. Like, if you're holding it the whole time, the ref may see it, but a lot of guys kick out at two, so if you grab it, like, at the last second,
yeah, that's true.
You know, the ref won't see it or
but
something.
But he almost missed it, too. That's what made that pin more aggravating. He almost missed the rope, but he grabbed it anyway. So.
It's really just the standing part that's, like, wicked annoying. You know what I mean? Like, if they're, like, if he's on his knees, on his shoulders, and he grabs it or something, like, it feels better, right? So.
No, I agree. Yeah. I think that's kind of bizarre as well. But anyway, great match, 3.5 stars, match of the night for me, and it's the longest match of the evening at 12:57, or longest singles match of the night. Obviously, the main event's different, but longest singles match of the night at 12:57, and Hammer gets the win.
All right. right back to the ring for an interesting maybe match here against between Moondog Spot against Special Delivery Jones as SD slips into the tag team bonanza here. And we'll find out later who his partner is considered to be. To battle old reliable Moondog Spot, SD is in full Intiga gear here again tonight. Gorilla says this is the largest SD's ever been. Al wonders if a Special Delivery's put on the weight to assist with some sort of power hold, but Gorilla says he hasn't seen it yet. We get the usual comments about Spot's bone as we get underway. We start with a lockup, and Spot lands a shot to the gut, but SD fires up and starts to work the arm. Gorilla mentions SD teaming with Paul Roma down in Australia recently, and Gene says he spent some time there as well. After a chase on the floor, Spot clobbers SD with a clothesline and then lands a forearm off the middle rope. Spot punches away for two. Al says Spot could be world champion if it wasn't for his concentration lapses during matches. Gene gets pretty horny about some woman he saw out on Madison Ave today as Spot's working a chinlock. SD breaks free, but Spot cuts him down and goes back to the chinlock. Gorilla says he's seen nothing from Jones that would warrant this weight gain. SD powers out again, and Spot punches his head, but Gorilla says that'll just lead to a sore hand, of course, because of his hard skull. Spot hits an atomic drop and then chucks him to the floor. Spot hammers away at SG as he tries to get back in the ring. SD eventually gets in and blocks a suplex and gets one of his own, comes back with a sidekick and a knee lift, and then chokes away. Spot powers through some more offense, but SD reverses a whip and tries for a headbutt. Spot blocks out with a knee lift. Spot hits the ropes, but the two collide in the middle of the ring. Gene congratulates Gorilla on his daughter's upcoming wedding, and Gorilla tells Gene he better behave himself at the event. Spot gets trapped in the ropes, and SD hammers away as Gorilla runs down all the previous Moondogs that have existed. SD eats a knee on a charge, but dodges a Spot elbow off the middle rope. SD follows the headbutt for the win. This was fine. SD was really just lost and sloppy through most of it, though. Spot carried this all the way and made it watchable. And the commentary Spot's actually dead on from a kayfabe point of view. He always gets a solid offense, but they always bag on him for his lack of follow-up. And that's really kind of part of his gimmick, is that he's always just like a step off. Decent enough to eat up time, but not much else. I gave this one a star just for the effort. What'd you think, Scott?
Easily not... Not one of Spotty or SD's worst matches. Once again, though, we couldn't go an entire pay-per-view without – or pay-per-view. An entire house show without the broadcast table talking about beefy guys and lots of weight. And
I mean, he did look bigger, I guess. At least this was legitimate.
And once again, they couldn't figure out what his fucking haircut was. What is that haircut? I don't know. It's some kind of strange flowing – oh, shut the fuck up with the haircut. You don't know what – I mean, God almighty. And of course they had to talk about the stupid fucking bone, and Gorilla's like, he was actually chewing on it backstage. I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. Were they drinking? This is so bad. I was, curious as to why SD was here. Like, I'm like, well, there's all tag team guys and SD's just kind of hanging around. It's very kind of odd here.
He's Rotundo's partner.
Way to spoil everything, Kelly. We're going to break that news in the main event.
2 fucking years of doing this show, this show chronology. You still haven't figured that out yet. I know. Sorry. Because, you know, Sarah's usually half asleep. He usually doesn't notice it, but no. No, I'm only kidding. It was okay. Spotty was great, as he usually is, but the announcing, I didn't realize as we were getting how fucking annoying the announcing was tonight. And it's probably because of the different common denominator from just Gorilla and Alfred, but we'll get to that down the line when we get to the awards. I gave this a star. I didn't want to give it a dud. It wasn't that abysmal. No, I gave it a half star, actually. I couldn't even give it a dud. It wasn't that bad, but it wasn't great. I don't know if I'm burnt out on SD or he's just not getting the right opponents, but he just hasn't been as good as I remember him being. I wonder if it's just the opponents or just where he is on the card. I don't know. What do you think, Kel?
Well, I don't know. I've never thought SD was anything too special, and by this time he's pretty much in Tony Gurria territory, where he's
with a better haircut. We have no name for
with a better haircut. That's debatable. A better haircut than Lanny Poffo, that's for sure. But for me, this was, you know, you see the names come up, and it's just. Sigh match at this point.
Yeah.
Flashback to 1981 match, basically, with these two guys still kicking around. And, yeah, I don't have too much to say about this one other than And to give a shout out to a fellow podcaster, Peter Winson, host of Greetings from Allentown, a great podcast everybody should listen to. He has a thing where he's named S.T. Jones Charge into the Corner, the S.T. Jones Memorial Failed Charge into the Corner, where he, you know, he did that in every match. And in this one, he does the failed charge, but it doesn't end up costing him the match, which, you know, 99 times out of 100 would have ended up in a loss for S.T. But S.T.'s able to rally, and now he's got two straight MSG wins.
Red hot this late
in his career. It's just a coincidence, I guess. Yeah, I went one star, and that feels generous. But, yeah, no, not much to say.
I'd be so pissed if I paid to go to the show. Sorry, D'Amato. All right.
Yeah.
Next up. Our buddy from the Islanders, the other half, Haku, taking on Nikolai Volkov, of course, Iron Sheik's tag partner. Interesting match here. Here's a test of Haku's talents against this rugged, choppy opponent. Nikolai sings as always, but Haku just power walks down and drop kicks him while he's singing, which is pretty funny. Haku's all over Nikolai, driving him to the floor. Volkov returns and kicks away and clubs away and then drills Haku across the forehead with a clothesline for two. Haku chops his way back in, but Nikolai reverses a whip and lands a hard clothesline before pitching the Islander outside. Al wonders why he would do that. Why are you letting him regroup? Gene says, can you imagine a Russian making a tactical error? And Al says, well, this one makes a few. So, a lot of inside baseball humor here. Not even. This is just flat-out Gene mocking the Soviets. Haku pulls Nikolai down and wraps his leg around the post. Back inside, Haku works the hamstrings and leg as we get some talk about gorilla loving Thanksgiving because he's a big bird man. Nikolai turns the tide with a knee to the gut and tries to run Haku to the buckle, but that backfires as Gorilla calls it a big mistake. Nikolai dips into his tights and jams it into Haku's throat, and then gets a roll-up for two. Haku then dodges a charge and gets an awkward roll-up with Nikolai rolling around all over the place during the pinfall for the win. These finishes just ruined all these matches tonight. This was a fun power sprint, surprisingly enough, that chugged along. I thought Nikolai actually looked okay here, thanks to Haku's pacing and selling. Finish was really dumb, but I was glad Haku got the win. Fine enough for a hard-hitting, quick match. I went one star, Kel.
Yeah, I went a half star. I really didn't. Outside of the opening moments where Haku sauntered down to the ring and dropkick Volkov.
That was great.
That was great. A hot start. But I don't, for me, Nikolai at this time feels so stale and outdated. And, he still hangs on for another 4+ years. It's incredible. Even though, like, at this time, this was the peak of, like, the 80s America versus the Soviet Union rivalry, and him doing the Russian gimmick, it just feels so just out of place or just not fresh at all. And he even does the hide the foreign object spot straight out of the 70s. And the pin was another horrible pin. This was basically Volkov doing the, oh, I know I'm jobbing tonight, but I'm not going to, make it look like I'm doing a job and wiggle around and not have his shoulders down. Oh,
it's
so
awful.
Horrible.
It was so stupid.
So horrible. Doesn't give, help Haku, who needs the help to get over. Kind of a selfish moment there for Nikolai. Yeah, horrible finish on a night with several horrible finishes.
I gave this a star. And what sucks about the only really thing I'd say about this match is we're talking about the goddamn awful finish. What sucks worse about it is the guys called it out and they pretty much said that Nikolai got screwed.
Yeah.
So Nikolai fucked the whole thing up anyway. And the announcers, instead of kind of letting it slide, actually called it out. And it made Haku look bad. So that was totally the whole thing was just a goddamn mess. The finish of that match. Not only did Nikolai overact on getting rolled up, it caused him to have his shoulders all over the place. And Gorilla, Mean Gene, and Alfred actually called it out and said that Haku got lucky and Nikolai got screwed. I mean, why?
Yeah, it's horrible.
Who does that?
I think they felt like they had to say something because it was so obvious.
Yeah,
that shoulders weren't down, but yeah. I mean, it's.
Yeah, I'm sure Nikolai got read the riot act when he went backstage. I'm sure
I would
he got called
so.
Out. Yeah, I'm sure he got called out. Otherwise, not much more. Your official runtime. Oh, by the way, the spot ESD match was 9:33. This was 4:51. I feel like I was drinking Bacardi 151 having to watch this match. And the end was just abysmal. But you're right. I don't know who the agent was on this night, but he shouldn't be happy because there was one atrocious ending of a match after another on this night. And this one may have been the worst of all of them. So, but Haku does win, so the Islanders go 2-for-2. Good night for them, JR, and maybe more to come. Maybe.
Yes, maybe indeed. All right, our final singles match of the night, thankfully, is two guys, if you're doing the math here, trying to figure out what teams we haven't seen all of, and that is Ray Rougeau taking on Bret the Hitman Hart. Delightful match on paper here, I thought, between two excellent Canadian workers. Good crescendo, cap off an interesting night filled with tag workers. Gene calls this a Canadian shootout. Gorilla says Bret has excellence of execution, as we get some early posturing. Al says in 1985, Bret was the most improved wrestler, and here in 1986, he's the most destructive. Ray stomps Bret's shades and then slugs away until Bret bails to regroup. Gene thinks these two have a wager on the Flames-Canadians playoff battle earlier in this year. Bret returns and grabs a side headlock, followed by some crisscrossing that ends with a Ray monkey flip and Bret slipping outside again. Bret comes back and Ray stomps his face, but Bret backs off and goes to the eyes. Bret unloads with right hands and an atomic drop, followed by hard elbow drops. Bret keeps bringing the heat as Gene says Stu won't care for how Bret carries himself, but Al says he's unsuccessful in the way he acts. Bret cranks a chin lock, but Ray slips free, gets a sunset flip for two, and this is where I finally just cashed out on Gene. He comes across as, like, so condescending and fake, like he's mocking being a wrestling announcer. Like, Gorilla does those, like, fake stories and shit, but it's much more subtle and he's better at the trolling. Gene is just, like, so blatantly over the top, you know what I mean? Well, Gorilla, they're really packed into the rafters tonight, cheering on Ray Rougeau, aren't they? You know, like, it's just so, like, he's, I don't know, it just fucking bugged the shit out of me this whole night. This is booming, bombastic announcer voice where he's just like, it just comes across like he's mocking everything. It's just, it doesn't feel believable at all. Like, Gorilla just does it in such a more natural way. Did you guys get that feeling, like, listening to Gene here?
Yeah, he can come off as, like, a used car salesman. And then when you're presented with this and you have to sell it, yeah, he's not going to come off good because he's selling, you know, a pretty pretty shitty used car.
But it doesn't sound like he even is selling a shitty used car. It sounds like he's mocking the used car. You know what I mean? Like, he's not even trying to sell it to us. It's like he's making fun of it. But it's just, like, so blatant. It's just, like, why am I listening to you and watching this? You're just shitting all over it, you know?
Yeah. Far from Gene's finest hour, that's
for
sure.
Was terrible this whole night. Who's going to go home with the purse money? It just felt like so, I don't know.
It's like carny worker. Like,
yeah,
you know,
it's so over the fucking
Here's the
top.
Bearded lady and the five midgets.
It's just way over the top. He's just so over the top with it all. I don't know. It's like a guy, like, on a skit, like a Saturday Night Live, pretending to be a wrestling announcer. Like, that's how he would act. Like, that's how it feels to me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so.
Your runtime is.
We're not done yet.
30.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Bret continues to control the match. Ray eventually starts to land some heavy right hands to cut him down. Ray runs into the buckle and beels him across the ring and follows with a drop kick for two. Ray follows up with a nice pile driver for two and dodges a punch with an atomic drop. He's all fired up, hammering away at Bret. Bret trips him and rolls him up using the ropes for leverage, yet again, and nabs the win. I mean, how many times can we see that fucking finish tonight? But at least Bret did it tightly and well, you know, instead of awkwardly. Fun match, lots of ebb and flow, some real hard-hitting offense. I wish we had more of a comeback for Ray before the end, but it was probably just time issues at this point. This is fine. 2.5 stars. Who's up, Scott? Good, you can go now.
Oh, sorry. Your time, 8:34. We had so much of a roll there, I didn't realize that you hadn't finished it. But that was a great match, and obviously Kelly still owes the Rougeaus money because he lost that bet too. And I thought it was a great match, but another ending that was a little cluttered. And I think Bret was really a good heel. I think obviously his heel work later on down the line, hint hint, was really good. But even this early heel work, he was, like, taunting Ray after the pin, and once again, he almost missed the fucking ropes with his feet. So, even that roll up at the end was a little, you know, haphazard. I mean, I really do think that Mean Gene just, like, ruined this show. He really did.
It was awful.
I mean, every match just makes it even worse. There's some matches that just didn't help anyway, but this was just brutal. This was just absolutely brutal. But this match was good. I gave it 2.5 stars. I wanted to give it 3, but it didn't quite reach the 3 level. Didn't quite reach there. But, you know, it served its purpose, kept the train moving. I think, you know, and we've seen some the best part about it is we've seen some good Hart Foundation Rougeau Brothers tag matches that have been exceptional. And on some of the other shows, I think there was a Boston Garden one and maybe a couple others. So it was and they get better down the line when the character script flips. But we'll get to that later on. So it was fine. 8:34 your runtime and a good match, which concludes our singles breakups battle bowl. maybe they should have done this, Kel, and just had like the guys who won get in the ring, you know.
All right, Kelly, your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, these two guys work well together, two second-generation stars. And, I mean, it would be better to see – well, maybe not better. I mean, but to see them in the tag setting, I think, is a bit more exciting. But the matches just weren't given too much time tonight, so and this one is no exception. Ray wasn't quite yet over, so there's, you know, kind of a lack of heat. But I think the crowd was pretty dead by this point. Just too many meaningless matches. But the work was well done. Hart, like you said, Scott, very good as a heel at this time. I love the beginning where Ray took off Brett's shades and stomped them, and then Brett sold it really good, you know, being really upset about that. Great facials, just great timing as a heel. But he had another foot on the ropes, cheap heel win. There's just been just all night long.
It's like they felt like tag guys can't win matches. Like they have to cheat to win singles matches. They're not used to it.
Yeah, this card, maybe Vlad booked this card. It just seems like it was booked by somebody who wasn't a usual booker or something, because it's just randomness and then, you know, the finishes just don't work. But anyway, yeah, I went 2 stars, similar to a lot of the matches we saw tonight, where there's just a level and it just doesn't go to the next gear. Only Valentine and Davey Boy really broke through the 2-star barrier for me anyway.
All right, time for the main event. Here we go. And that is a big battle royal with all of the gentlemen that have participated in matches earlier tonight and a couple others, as we'll see. A good capper to the night, I thought, at least, with $50,000 on the line for this tag team battle royal. If one member of the team is eliminated, the whole team would be gone. And here are the entrants. The Moondogs, the Rougeau Brothers, the Dream Team, the Indians, Chief J. Strongbow and Steve fucking Gator Wolf. The Hart Foundation.
We didn't get singles matches out of those two guys.
Oh, God. They did it for a reason, obviously. The Hart Foundation, Mike Rotundo, and SD Jones, which is just really pathetic for poor Mike Rotundo. The Islanders, Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkoff. The Killer Bees, the Machines, the Bulldogs, and Stud and Bundy. The Indians is such a fucking lazy, absurd name. Like, I feel like the crowd even laughed when they came out. The Indians! They're fucking, like, laughing at these jamokes just fucking hobbling out to the ring. Terrible. Strong mix of talent here. We'll see if it's any fun. Gorilla says Stud and Bundy are the favorites. The bell sounds and everyone converges as Gorilla says Strongbow's out of retirement for a crack at the money. And that, I thought that was kind of funny. They just basically called him greedy. Spot gets chucked out within seconds, sending Moondogs packing. We get some interesting pairings here, as also obvious ones like Stud and Machine. Pretty standard affair so far with plenty of brawling and teases. We get a spot where a bunch of guys are trying to shove out Bundy, but Stud makes a save. The Bees and Beefer almost shove Hart out, but he hangs on. Things meander along for a while with no eliminations until that slug Gator Wolf gets knocked out, sending the Indians packing. Gene again takes a shot at Strongbow for being greedy and risking his health for this cash. The Machines chuck Sheik, so Nikolai's done too. Sheik is busted on the back of the head from hitting a chair on the way down. That was pretty gnarly. Hart and Dynamite tussle the ropes and fall out, leading to both of those teams being done, and then the four of them brawl on the floor. Al calls that an upset. The Rougeaus nearly toss Bundy but can't finish him, and things have thinned out quite a bit as you start to get more double teams by partners. Stud eventually tosses Jacques to thin things out some more. Stud tells Ray to hit it, but I thought it was a strong showing by the Rougeaus throughout the whole night. Super Machine backdrops Beefcake out, ending a nice showing by him. Big Machine nearly slams Stud out, but Bundy comes over and knocks Big Machine to the floor, and that leaves us with Big John Stud and King Kong Bundy versus the Islanders. The crowd is really revved up and cheering on the Islanders as Stud just stands there and chuckles. Stud and Bundy control with power strikes, but the Islanders come back with a flurry. Tama eats an avalanche in the corner, but Haku comes to prevent the elimination. Stud holds Haku and Bundy charges, but Haku slips down and Bundy shoves Stud to the floor by accident, giving the Islanders the big win and a massive pop. This is a fine battle royal. The finish was really fun. A huge win for the Islanders to help legitimize them. Stud and Bundy were perfect for this. Even with their star diminishing, this is a good way to use them. I thought the Rougeaus had a really good night overall. And a fun ending to a very odd night. I went 2 stars in this match. What'd you think, Kelly?
Yeah, I went 2 stars as well. The finish finally redeemed the show as far as the babyface is finally getting a victory and a big one. And a team that needed it with the new team, the Islanders. Getting the win and eliminating the biggest team and the favorites, Stud and Bundy, at the end. So, yeah, all's well that ends well, I guess. But, wow, it took a while to get to this point. It wasn't the greatest Battle Royal. I mean, the Battle Royal we watched a few months back was better than this one, I thought. The early stage of this was a bunch of random stuff. But, I mean, having Strongbow and Gator Wolf in here as the Indians, hilarious.
Awful.
Hilarious, whatever.
The crowd Strongbow, laughing at them was great. I mean, that just completely delegitimizes them as soon as they come out. Just laughing at the Indians!
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Indians. Strongbow was well into his 50s at this point and looked, you know, every year of his age, if not more. He just was so out of shape and balding and all that. The longtime fans in New York would have seen him for years, and then to see him appear randomly here, that would have added a few laughs. Gator Wolf, never thought we'd see him again, but here he is. Wow. I wonder why they needed this extra team. Was it, did they really have to have whatever, how many teams it was? I don't know.
I know, but, yeah, no need. I mean, Strongbow must have just been the agent and probably just said, I want to go.
Yeah,
out
maybe this was Strongbow's idea, right. This whole goddamn card. We can blame it on him. But, of course, and he wouldn't even be the guy to be eliminated. You know, he's still too big of a star to be the one eliminated. Gator Wolf has to go out. Strongbow, this is his final MSG match. Wow, after 15, 16 years
of torture.
In the Big Apple.
Yeah.
Parv, if Parv hasn't seen this match, he should watch it immediately because it would probably put a big smile on his face just for the Indians.
They definitely sound like he should be wrestling like an armory somewhere. The Indians, like that's such a low single A level indie show right there. Gimmick, oh, the Indians.
Totally, and I know they teamed a few more times. Like this wasn't just a one time only thing. Like very like maybe another 3 or 4 times. For whatever reason, maybe in some of those other battle royals around the horn. But yeah, the finish was good and the right team went over and it sends the fans home happy after a night of mostly very poor professional wrestling.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, before we get to my comments, I wanted to do a little history. They've been going for about a week around the circuit with this concept. The first one was on October 13th at Arco Arena in Sacramento. And Chief Just, you know what's sad? Chief Just Strongbow and Steve Gator Wolf were in that one too. They actually went on tour with this nonsense. We don't have a winner. Graham didn't have a winner for that one. The next night they were at the Tacoma Dome on the 14th. Sheik and Volkoff won that one. They did one in Phoenix. We don't have a winner in that one. They did one on the 17th in L.A. Sheik and Volkoff won that one. And they did one the 18th in Denver. Sheik and Volkoff won that one. And then they did one the night before in – wow. The one the night before in Houston at the Summit. And Sheik and Volkoff won that one.
Wow.
So very interesting. I agree with Kelly. I think the other Battle Royal was better. I mean, this was fine. I think, you know, the concept didn't seem, was probably not used a lot back then, so they probably were kind of wondering how they were going to get this to work, but it was literally almost like a regular Battle Royal with pairs, obviously, as a tag team. And so it's kind of like a doubling up kind of thing, but it was fine. Crowd was into it. They weren't into much anything else tonight. But yeah, they did seem like a parody act when they came out. Steve Gatorville was probably like, this is what my career has been lowered to. And Strombo's like, shut the fuck up. I'm getting extra tonight. You know, I mean, it's just bad. Let me see if they're on the other ones. Were they in the other ones? I mean, I can't believe I thought that tonight was just because they needed two guys to fill the roster, but.
No, I think they worked a few shows together. I know they did, actually.
Well, they were in the one at Arco. And they were in that one. Yeah, they were like a legit team in all of these battle royals. I thought they were just like there at the garden to fill the two slots. I actually didn't think they went around.
Strongbow's farewell war march.
Farewell should have shot him in the side of the head. All right, yeah,
it's a bit harsh.
Go back there,
old Yeller. Wouldn't go that far.
Murder the fucking guy. Come on, old Yeller. I gave it 2 stars. I mean, it was a fine battle royal. I like Stud and Bundy. You can clearly tell that they're kind of on the way out. But what a night for the Islanders. Pair of singles wins, and they win the tournament. So good for Haku and Tama. Big win on this battle royal, and it was fun. I do agree with Kelly. I think the other battle royal was better, but this was good. Good way to end the show. Unique way to end the show. And now to end our show, it's time for some awards.
Let's do it. Here we go. Awards. What do we think? Match of the night. I think this is, at least was an obvious choice for me. I went with Davey Boy Smith versus Greg Valentine.
Pretty simple, yes.
Yep.
Kelly? Okay.
Yep.
Zach, let me mark that down. All right. Our Cousin Junior, which is the worst match of the night. There were some interesting options on this evening. I just went with the one that I gave the dud to. That was Super Machine and Bundy. And again, I mean, not really their fault. They just weren't given a lot of time, but I expected more. It really disappointed me.
Yeah, it's the lone dud of the night. It deserves to be worst match.
What do you have, Kelly?
I went with Haku and Nikolai Volkov. It was getting late in the show. Volkov, just like I already ranted about how much I disliked him. On this evening, so like I said about the Machines Bundy match, it was short, and I didn't really, you know, dislike it. But and I didn't give it a dud either. But yeah, I'm going with Haku and Volkov.
All right, for the second straight week, I went with Roddy Piper for my MVP.
Yep, me too.
Yeah, it was. He owned that segment, and he woke the crowd up after the first half of the show was pretty dry.
All right, the Uncle Elmer, I was going to go with Steve Gatorwolf just because fuck him. But I'm actually going with Mean Gene. I thought he was the worst part of the show all night. He took away from the commentary. He took away from a lot of the matches. I hate the fake announcer shtick. I could not wait for him to get the fuck out of the booth. I just did not like him at all. I thought he ruined Gorilla and Al's chemistry that they usually have going. And I don't know. He just annoyed me. Like, I didn't find him entertaining at all. He's who I found myself bitching about the most during the show. So, What do you guys have?
I went with Nikolai. I singled him out this evening. For me, it was the clear worst wrestler.
Even more than Gatorwolf?
Well, he didn't. You couldn't even tell what he was doing in the battle royal. For me, Volkov with that whole stupid rolling around BS that clinched it for him.
I'm going Mean Gene. Nikolai would have been fine if the commentary just by that point I wanted to just kill him. I want to kill all of them. Kill everybody. Cleanse it. Terrible.
He was terrible. He was awful.
Terrible.
All right. What do we got next here? We have the best moment. I went with it's like two different parts of the promo. I went Piper saying he's still a no good son of a bitch, and then Vlad mentioning Hogan. Both got huge pop. So I'm just going to say the whole fucking Piper's pit was the best moment. But those two specific spots really stood out for me. What do you guys have?
Yeah, I got
yeah, the pit.
Yeah, pit. Yeah.
Okay. All right, and the Arcidi Award for the most juiced up of the night. I didn't think anyone really stood out like big time, so I just went with the default British Bulldogs, like we usually do when they're on the card. I mean, they were gassed as always, so.
Yeah, that's what I did, default Bulldogs.
Yeah, no, there was nobody else in that kind of shape on this show.
Okay. All right, final grades out of 10. I think this is pretty similar to that September show we watched. There was not much here to get excited about, like one good match. couple of the decents, the Piper's Pit, and then just a whole bunch of nothing otherwise. Nothing to get excited about, nothing with heat, no feud, you know, just nothing going on. I went with a 4. I mean, it's not an awful watch. Like I said, if it wasn't part of this, I might have enjoyed it more. But, yeah. But what do you guys have, Scott?
I thought I was going to like this show, and I was feeling good about it. I was watching it, and then actually our podcast tonight actually changed my mind. I was like, you know, this was actually a fun, unique show, and then we did this show, and I'm like, you know what? It really wasn't. I'm giving it a 4. I wanted to give it like a 6.5, but I'm like, nah, I just realized it's as unique as it was, it wasn't great. I give it a 4.
Well, I went with 4.5, which is what is actually... I've only ranked 2 shows lower than that. So, yeah, that's how I feel. All the matches except for Valentine and Davey Boy are totally... they're not worth any extra breath. I won't watch any of them again. I mean, the Battle Royal, yeah, it was okay. But... yeah, the Piper's Pit is great, but the wrestling, it was just so many bad finishes, so many just meaningless matches between two guys that had no issue with each other. And so, yeah, it's one of my lowest ranked shows, but apparently I liked it just a shade more than you guys.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Anyway, it's probably one of the lowest overall scores I think any show's gotten for us. So there's that.
Yeah, definitely.
We got a few quick bits of feedback here. First from our buddy Greg Dufour. The Tag Team Battle Royal is a lot of fun. The Islanders are definitely the stars of the show. Piper's Pit really seemed to drag on and on. Not one of my favorites. So interesting take from Greg. Mm. Our buddy Landy, Richard Land, says, do we really need that extra team of Chief J. Strongbow and Steve Gatorwolf? Mm. They have the same Battle Royal from the night before in Houston on the network. The MSG one is a million times better. Piper and Heenan are friggin' awesome. There you go. So we'll have to check out that Houston show. Mike Poulin, I watched the show recently. It's decent enough. The Piper's Pit's to highlight. You have some good matches sprinkled in. Brett Ray is solid, but could have been longer. And our buddy Mr. D'Amato, who was there live that night. Epic Piper's Pit. Great to see Vlad get his moment. Piper ignoring the classic MSG matches in Orndorff in 85 is my only minor criticism. Otherwise, a huge moment that sparked PWI to put Piper number one over Hogan in their most popular rankings that month. So there you go. A little bit of insight from Mr. D'Amato. We'll be back next Monday night, gentlemen, us three here, looking at the November 86 MSG House Show. Hopefully that one's a little bit better. And then we'll go on and on from there. Anything on your end, Scott, for this week coming up?
Well, we do have a main event this week. Still kind of working out the details, but we will have the newest episode of the main event this week. We'll probably do, even though it's been a couple weeks, we'll do a little SummerSlam discussion, look ahead to No Mercy, see what's going on in the indie circuit. So, be a good show. Not quite sure what the details will be, but we do have a main event this week.
Okay. Last week's letters from Center Stage I thought was a pretty good one. We also had a pretty big announcement for our future. We're going to be going to, as Alan says, fortnightly. So instead of every Friday, Letters from Center Stage will now drop every other Friday, so twice a month, just with the fall coming, getting a little bit busier with our time difference. It's a little bit tougher to record, so we're going to spread things out a bit. But episode 20 coming not this Friday, but next Friday, we were able to get Parv out on one of his legend contract appearances, so he'll be joining us for the big episode 20. Of course, the meaning there is that Parv and Alan did 20 episodes of Letters from Kayfabe, and since we're tying their record, we asked them to come out for episode 20. It'll be a good one, so check that out, and check out episode 19 that just dropped as well. Aaron, George, and myself did a second installment of Making the Cut for the PTBN Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever series. We talked Chris Jericho, Scott Hall, Triple H. Scott, we covered your boy, and I believe we did, was it Christian? No, not Rob Van Dam. I keep saying Christian. It wasn't Christian. Rob Van Dam. It was Hall, Jericho, RVD, and Triple H. So that hit over the weekend, so check that out. Of course, tons of podcasts and podblasts and written pieces all about this project. Be sure to get in on the conversation on the Facebook group. If you're not part of it, just reach out, and we'll get you added. Kelly, anything on your end you want to cover?
Yeah, well... myself, Pete, and Johnny have just launched WorldCast, which is a podcast looking at world-class championship wrestling that you can find on the network. Basically, that was the inspiration, is now that they've uploaded a sizable chunk of the catalog there, you can start from almost the very beginning, basically episode number 2, and work your way forward. And you get to start basically a year before the Von Erichs versus Freebirds feud started. So you got a lot of, you know, kind of random stuff going on. The first year, 1982, is not really discussed much amongst wrestling fans. It's going to be an interesting journey to see the transformation from basically a not a dead territory, but not a hot territory, to a smoking hot territory within a year. And, of course, it's the three of us from Titans. We always have fun together, and it's going to be a weekly show, or at least we're going to try and keep it on a weekly schedule, which is a first for me after all these years. And there'll be, you know, short little shows because, you know, we're not, you know, each episode is 40 minutes long, not a ton to talk about. So that would be probably the runtime for the show itself, 45 minutes or so. And yeah, check it out, WorldCast, every week on Place to Be Nation.
Very good. And of course, a little you know, side material for that as well. Scott, myself, and a few other guys at PTBN back in our excellent Network Adventure written series days, we covered a lot of those world-class shows as well. So if you're looking for a little written supplement with some varied opinions, be sure to check that out too. All right. So like I said, we'll be back next week. Follow us on social media for any other updates. Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation. Twitter, PlaceNumber2BeNation. Instagram, Tumblr. Shop with us, PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon. And, of course, subscribe to all of our feeds on iTunes, Pro Wrestling Only, Place of Nation Wrestling, Place of Nation Pop. Lead us feedback. Rate us as well. And speaking of feedback, be sure to post it each and every week, and we'll read it here on air as well. So for Kelly and Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you next Monday night from the Garden.
Never wanted to see things your way. I had to go astray. Oh, why was I such a fool? Now I see that the grass is greener. Is it too late for me to find my way home? How could I be so wrong?